Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Riders Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Coming up today, we've got all the usual best mix of music, interviews, and of course, all things literary. So stick around. When in this charming car, this charming man, why pamper the life's complexity when the leather runs smooth on the passenger seat? Why pamper life's complexities when the leather runs smooth on the passenger seat? Indeed, Moz, why indeed? Well, anyway, we've got another great show coming up for you today. This, the 9th of October, and we are keeping winter at bay for the moment, so long may that continue. Anyway, as to the show, we've got Phil Lynch, the co-director of the Lingo Festival. He's going to be joining us from the phone in a couple of minutes, and after 4 o'clock, in our usual writer slot, we have Angela Carr coming in to talk to us about her debut poetry collection, How to Lose Your Home and Save Your Life. Kind of stick around for that one, folks. Promises to be fantastic afternoon of chats. Anyway, to music first. This one is from The Flaming Lips. It is off their album Soft Bulletin, and the song is called Race for the Prize. Yeah, Flaming Lips there, Wayne Coyne and the boys. Well, we've got Phil Lynch on the line, Phil from the Lingo Festival. Phil, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi, Morgan. Thanks very much for having me on. Yeah.
No, absolute pleasure to have you on. So, Phil, anyway, Lingo Festival takes place next weekend, upcoming. It's only your second year, am I right?
Second year, yeah. So it kicks off this night week, so it's getting very close now.
What's it all about, Phil, for people who've never heard of Lingo before?
Well, it's a spoken word festival, so basically it does what it does in the tin, as the saying goes. It's primarily showcasing the best of what's happening in Ireland at the moment in terms of spoken word, which is another way of saying performance poetry, which is really another way of saying poetry, but done in a very presentable and accessible way. And there's quite a burgeoning scene around Dublin and around the whole country, indeed. Lots of events happening regularly. So the idea behind starting the Lingo Festival, the build-up to it, but then the real idea behind it was to showcase and give a wider platform to what is going on and, bring in some international artists as well to perform so that the local scene could learn or see from them how they do it, and equally let the international acts see what's going on here in Ireland and maybe encourage them to take more interest in it as well.
Good stuff. So we've mentioned that last year was the first year that the festival started, but I mean, has there been a big scene of spoken word stuff in Ireland or in Dublin for a long time?
Well, there has been, and there have been various proponents of it over the years for quite a while, but I suppose in the last 10 years or less, quite a number of events began to happen, and I suppose social media contributed maybe to the spread of it as well. And a lot of them were below the radar in the sense that they were happening, they were regularly, some of them are weekly, some of them monthly, or more sporadically, but they were being well attended and much appreciated, but, the public at large, I suppose, didn't really, weren't aware of them. So that was, again, one of the rationales behind putting together something like the Lingo Festival, because while there were literary festivals and even poetry festivals plenty around the country, there was spoken word per se wasn't really a feature on many of them, or any of them nearly, with some exceptions. But so it was just to kind of take it from below the radar onto the radar, if you like, and to give it a bigger stage, give the more exposure to a wider audience, and to try and let people see that it's and hear indeed that it's poetry is accessible to all and can be appreciated and enjoyed, is an enjoyable pastime as well. It's not just something that people do stuffed away in dark rooms or whatever,
The writer locked away in the garret,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, and you know, to give a recognition to the local artists, like, we have an open submission process, and then obviously we curate a certain number of people as well. But I mean, overall, we have probably between 70 and 80 individual acts performing over the weekend from Friday night to Sunday night, and the bulk of them would be Irish. Like, we have our headline acts as well, but the bulk of them are from the Irish scene, and indeed there'll be people from across the four provinces there, so it's not just a Dublin-centric thing.
Before we get into the programme of the festival, and can't wait to chat about some of the venues and some of the stuff going on, like, you mentioned there that spoken word is performance poetry, which is to say it's poetry, but then, you know, when you talk about it with ideas of, you know, more conventional poetry, like, and I'm thinking here of the Yeats and the Heaney and all the stuff leaving sort of poetry, let's call it as it is, really. Is there elements of kind of snobbishness, you know, does poetry look at spoken word as, you know, you're not really it?
Well, I think some people, you know, people try to find reasons to have differences in the poetry world. I like to think of it as all part of the wider poetry family, and, you know, just it's just another way of doing poetry. It's another way of allowing people to express, with maybe touching on a bit of the theatrical element as well, and performance, as I said, you know. So it's kind of, there is this debate about page and stage, but, you know, lots of the performers, indeed some of the people on the festival committee, and certainly lots of the performers are published poets in their own right, so, you know, they're well used to the page, but they're equally adept at the stage, so there's no reason for there to be a divide or a difference. You know, I prefer to think of it as just another way of doing it, and it doesn't mean that it's the only way, and it doesn't mean it's the only way the proponents of spoken word operate in the poetry world either, you know. So, like, I mean, it goes, like, I suppose another way of looking at it is that spoken word as such, or poetry as such, existed in spoken forms, in the oral format, you know, thousands of years ago, before we had printers and things like that. So, you know, some ways going back to roots in that sense. But even, you mentioned Yeats, and I mean, lots of people have put Yeats' stuff to music and performed it, including, like, Stephen J. Smith on
our committee,
and Enda Riley. They have a CD, or actually Yeats, I think it's the Water Boys, and, you know, numerous others. Christy Murray even has
Damien Dempsey too.
So yeah, you can wrap it up and cotton wool it and put it in boxes, and, you know, everybody stays in their own box, and one looks over the edge at the other every so often. But really, as I say, I prefer to think of it as part of a large family that, you know, get on reasonably well together. You know, it's squabbling about again.
So the festival is starting next Friday, the 16th of October, and it runs through to Sunday.
It runs through to Sunday, and we have, I think, about 20 events altogether on, and we've managed to avoid, I think, overlapping any of them, so everybody will be able to follow the trail around.
I was browsing through the website, sorry to cut across you, but I mean, the variety and the diversity on the programme is massive. It's vast, really.
Yeah. This is one of the things we're really excited about this year, because, you know, last year was the first year, and it was very much, you know, putting the toe in the water and sucking it and seeing what would happen. But this year, yeah, no, we were delighted that, and, you know, we had open calls for people to propose events that they'd like to host or curate in the festival, and we took on a number of those, and we also had a call for new work, which is another exciting thing that we're doing this year. There's a new piece of work being created especially for the festival to be performed for the first time. And that's next Saturday evening in Smock Alley Theatre, and that's a guy called Dylan Coburn Gray, who's written a piece especially for us. So it's a world premiere. So, you know.
Fantastic.
But, you know, then we have, you know, several other things. Like, for example, we're showcasing the Northern Ireland poetry scene this year in an event as well. There's several great regular events held up there in various parts of the north, and there's an event on the Sunday afternoon at the Workman's Club that's showcasing about 10, I think there's about 10 people going to perform at it from that scene as well.
Is the festival, it's mainly located in Dublin city centre, or are there any other venues being used?
It is primarily, I mean, and that's partly to try and facilitate people getting to the different events because, yeah. You know, when they're not overlapping, there's not too much time between them. But yeah, again, we've branched out. I think we have about 8 venues this year because we have, and there are some free events as well, just to mention that in passing too.
Good stuff.
We have there's family related events. There's a guy called Paul Timothy. He's putting on. He's created a kind of a special show for the event for the festival called A Guard at the Cross. That's going to be on in Smock Alley next Saturday. And it's kind of a children stroke family based. He recommends seven years of age upwards, and he's drawn from the work of children in creating the show as well.
I was going to ask you, is it a family-friendly festival? Because I know Smock Alley is a space that gets used for a lot of festivals, and it's a fantastic space. I mean, you can just let the kids go wild, really, on the upper floor there.
Well, we're going too wild, but anyway. Some of the events obviously are held at night, and we have a festival club as well, which will be later than late as well. When the formal events are over, we're going to have some hip hop and others, and some of the performers from the festival events perform in the festival club, which is the meeting house there in Meeting House Square, and also in the liquor rooms on the Sunday night. But there's another new event this year, which is also a family event, and it's part of our opportunity or our desire, if you like, to get out into the community as well. And it's been held in Pierce Street Library, and this has been run by our friends from Headsnuff and Albie Carraher, herself a fine poet. Poetry Hunt, it's called. It's effectively a treasure hunt, and it's going to be, the idea is to get, say, families, you know, parents or a parent and a couple of kids or whatever, to put form a team and come in, and the clues will be all sort of poetry based, but they'll be scattered around or hidden around the library in different sections of the library, but there'll be, the clues will be poetical or literary in nature, but very accessible as well, and that's a pre-event, and there'll be face painting going on, and there might even be cupcakes or biscuits and things like that are going as well. So that's on in Pierce Street Library at 1 o'clock next Saturday.
Lovely.
There may be youth events as well, so again we're trying to cater for as many sort of sections of the community, if you like. There's a youth event, there's workshops being run at the moment for a few weeks back in the Irish Writers' Centre, being facilitated by people who do workshops in schools and things like that, and there'll be an event then on Saturday as well with the in Smock Alley with the cream, if you like, of the output of these workshops, you know.
And
they're
how
16 to 21-year-olds.
How does it work as far as, I mean, you said that it's a lot of homegrown talent and there's a couple of international acts too. How does it work as far as headliners? I mean, it's the programme is probably too large for us to go through here, but, you know, what are the highlights of the festival?
Well, I suppose essentially the three headline acts on Friday night we open with, there's a band, or, you know, collective poetry and music collective called Tongue of Foo, who are London based, and they're, you know, essentially what they do is they do backing music to poems. So a poet gets up to perform a poem and gives them an indication of the kind of, it's unrehearsed, it's completely improv, and they give an idea of the sort of emotion or the feeling or the sort of, you know, whatever that they want to get across with the poem, and they start into the poem and the band starts into a piece of music to accompany the mood of the poem. And it's brilliant. I actually saw them in action. In fact, I performed with them down at the Kirch Festival in Galway earlier this year, and it was just an amazing experience. Also, that's right now, it's going to kick off at a bang. We've about 10 performers lined up to perform with them, and that should be a brilliant opening. There'll be a little novelty thing down as well. We have a thing called a Roman Folkloriate for the festival, and last year we had John Cummins, he's a former All-Ireland poetry stand jump, and this year we have John Miles. So they're going to do a little thing at a handover, like passing the baton from one to the other, so that'll be built into the opening night as well, and then we have the festival club afterwards. But on Saturday then, just quickly to move on, another event I'd really recommend is Holly McNish. She's a UK based performance poet who I've seen a couple of times and just can't wait to see again. I hope I get a chance to if I'm not too busy. And we've teamed up Elaine Feeney to perform with her as well. Elaine is based down in Galway, and she's a brilliant poet. And another example of somebody who is a published poet, has a couple of books to her name, and also can perform then without the page as well.
Fantastic, so, yeah.
And of course, Sunday, on Saturday night as well, I should mention we have the Slam, the Lingo Slam poetry competition, which we've been running heats for over the last couple of months. And in fact, we had a video heat running this week. It just closed today. So there'll be 12 finalists taking part in that. And that's later on Saturday night in the Workman's. And it's going to be, the prize for that is quite significant. It's to get a chance actually to open for a big headliner, Saul Williams on Sunday night in the Button Factory, but they also get a paid trip to London for around St Patrick's Day next year to in Trafalgar Square to an expected audience of around 20,000. So, and on top of that's not all. They get a Bog Oak trophy, which one of our community, Fergus Constable, who's a great performer himself, created for us last year, and Abby Oliveira from Derry won that last year, and she'll be bringing it back to the Workman's on Saturday night to hand over to the winner of this year's Slam. So that'll be emceed by a comedy act called Lords of Strut. So then Sunday night is the big night of the main headliner, Saul Williams, who we were very lucky to capture. He's on a for a tour at the moment, this will be his only performance in Ireland or the UK, and I haven't seen him before myself live, but he was here I think about 10 years ago, since around the country at the time, but and he has a new book and a new CD out as well, and we have a guy called Mark Christ supporting him from he's a UK performance poet and very good as well, and then our own John Cummins that I mentioned earlier is the opener as well as the Slam winner, so that'll be an action-packed night and something we're really excited about.
Right, Phil, well, a wealth of information there, Phil.
That's in the Button Factory. Yeah, there's so much happening, but it's all in the programme and it's all online. It can be accessed through, there's a website, lingofestival.com, and there's the usual Facebook page and Twitter.
Lingo Festival.
Lingo Fest.
And lastly, Phil, any tickets left?
There are indeed, yeah.
Where can we get
the early bird tickets are sold out, which is good news, but there's tickets some of the events, as I say, are free, but for the paid-in ones, they range from €7 for some of the events, and most of them are average around 8 or 10 up to 19.50 for Saul Williams and Sunday night. They're available mainly through eventbrite.ie.
Good stuff.
And also the Smock Alley box office as well. Can't remember, sokali.com I think, but again all the information about how to access them is up on the website as well and in the programme.
Fantastic. Well, Phil, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Sounds like a fantastic festival and a great addition to the Dublin literary scene.
And there will be a bit of music, and as I say, the festival clubs will have music and hip-hop and stuff going on each night as well after the events finish. Another novelty event we have this year, actually, just to mention it briefly, is a multilingual event where we'll have a brunch on Sunday morning with there'll be people performing in Irish, English, Polish, I think, Tamil, and God knows what else. a few selected acts, and then there may be an opportunity for some others to get in on the act as well. So it's hopefully going to be a great weekend, and hopefully people will come out and support it, because that's what makes it in the end.
Absolutely. And that's what it's for. Absolutely. Well, Phil, thanks very much for coming on the show. It's been a okay. pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thanks very much for the opportunity, and happy to talk about it again. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you're going to be Near FM are involved in
Near FM will be doing a live broadcast. Next Friday evening, somewhere in Temple Bar. I'm not sure of the location.
I think it's from the Workmans.
From the Workmans, the
Tung Fu event, or something around that. Anyway, so
I hope to make it there myself. But if I don't see you, Phil, great. Best of luck with the festival.
Okay, thanks a lot, Morgan. Thanks for having me
on. Good luck, Phil. Bye-bye.
All the best now. Good luck.
That was Phil Lynch, co-director of the Lingo Festival. Well, you're listening to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, on 90.3 Near FM. Take another piece of music now, but stick around after 4 o'clock. We've got Angela Carr coming into studio to talk to us about her debut poetry collection, How to Lose Your Home and Save Your Life. But for now, folks, this is Sigur Rós, Hoipipola.
This is 90.3 Near FM.
And you're very welcome back to Writer's Block with me, Morgan O'Reilly, right here on 90.3 Near FM. Well, it's after 4 o'clock, and that can only mean one thing, that a living, breathing writer has entered the studio. Angela, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Morgan. Lovely to be here.
No, it's a pleasure to have you. Pleasure to have you. So, awkward stuff out of the way first. Please tell our listeners who you are and where you're from and how you came to writing.
Okay. Well, my name's Angela Carr. I'm a writer and a poet. You can probably tell from the Glasgow accent. I'm not local. I am a Northside dub, but I don't think I'll be getting my cards just yet. I grew up in Glasgow. My parents are both Irish. They're both from Donegal, so I'm kind of Irish 2.0. And I came to Ireland in 1999 when everything was kind of booming. Nice. But of course, I've been coming back and forth to Ireland, and particularly to Donegal, ever since I was a child, probably two or three times a year. So it's always been a big part of my life. Yeah.
Excellent. And you are a poet. We were talking about your debut collection, How to Lose Your Home and Save Your Life, before the ads there. But how did you come to writing initially? I mean, were you writing as a child? Were you writing as a teenager?
How
did it start for you?
It started as a child. I think I was one of those children that just took to books straight away. That was and loved them. One of the things I think that helped influence that was my mother sent us, all three of us, my brother and a sister, sent all three of us to elocution lessons from I was four, I think, when I started. Great. So it meant that I was introduced to poetry very, very young.
Ah, okay.
And also just the reading of poetry. And I think the lovely thing about finding poetry at that age is it's got nothing to do with meaning. It's not scary. It's all about the language, the sound of it, the rhythm. It's playing with words, really. So I did that for about 9 years, eventually doing exams through Lambda in London. So that was kind of my introduction to the written word.
I can imagine, yeah, it would be wonderful training.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Any poet, really, yeah.
Yes, the really weird thing is I forgot all about it for about 20 years. And then when I started writing again, I was going, poetry, that's really weird. Where did that come from? Okay. And I'd forgotten I had this whole apprenticeship of reading poetry when I was a kid.
And is poetry the form that you feel most comfortable in?
It sort of emerged from the writing that I was doing. Like I said, I wrote when I was younger. I kind of got to a point where I was showing work to maybe other kids at school and they laughed at it, and that was it. I just stopped writing for ages. But it was one of those things that if you'd asked me when I was a kid what I was going to be when I grew up, I thought writer, definitely. But then I just didn't do anything about it for a really long time. And it got to the point where I thought, well, if I'm going to end up as a writer, I also have to start. So I went to the Irish Writers' Centre. I did some creative writing classes there. And that was the primarily fiction, or really just understanding the basics of, okay. of fiction writing. But there were also opportunities to write shorter pieces. And I found I was more drawn to the poetic voice, and certain things I was writing sort of ended up as poems. So I kind of just went with that. And because that's what I was starting to emerge, I then did another course with Nuala Ngono, and that kind of really set me on the path to writing poetry and to writing this collection.
And did you find, obviously, the mentor aspect of those courses, but also the communal aspect, was that something that really spurred you on, I suppose?
Definitely. I was very lucky in that I had very good teachers. I think anyone who's serious about writing or wants to start writing, grab any opportunity you can to get to a class with someone who really knows about writing. And particularly the experience with Nuala. I mean, not only she's a fantastic writer, she's also a great teacher. And what happened was the group of us who did the class together, there was a really good dynamic between all of us, and we carried on working together after the class. So we've been working together for about 5.5 years now.
Oh, excellent. Still meeting up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there any poems, for instance, in the collection that you can directly credit, or not credit them, but
they are credited in the collection, because all of them would have been workshopped with that group of people. So they definitely wouldn't be what they are without their input.
In terms of, you mentioned Nuala Ngono there, and you kind of almost fell into poetry, would I be right in saying, or slided? No, fell is quite violent.
It emerged, yeah. I think. It was the thing that seemed to happen when I started writing. It seemed to want to be poetry, so...
Was there anyone you were trying to imitate? I mean, who were your influences, or who would you count as your influences?
Oh, it's kind of the best question and the worst question, okay. Because I don't think I was consciously trying to imitate anyone. I don't think I knew enough about poetry to do that. And also, I think my education in Scotland in terms of literature would have been very different to what I see here in Ireland. In Ireland,
really?
Well, you were talking earlier about Yeats and Heaney and kind of the Leaving Cert poets, and they cast a really long shadow, I think, in Ireland. So I still do see the influence of those poets in a lot of contemporary work that's being produced. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of that kind of influence, that sort of all pervasive uh-huh. influence in Scottish poetry, or certainly not in my education. We kind of covered everything from Shakespeare, the metaphysical poets, and Robert Browning, and then we did more modern stuff like William Carlos Williams, Norman McCaig, E. Cummings. So there was T.S. Eliot. There was kind of a little bit of everything. In terms of what I enjoy reading, there's a Scottish poet, Edwin Morgan, who definitely was probably the first poet that I discovered in our school book collection of poetry that was talking about the city of Glasgow that I knew. There are poems about, you know, walking down Stocky Hall Street in Glasgow, and that seemed really interesting and unusual to me, because poetry did seem like something that from the past, yeah. that there were these contemporary voices talking about the places that I knew and loved. So he was definitely a key figure, I would say.
Excellent. And can I ask you, do you feel your Scottish identity, does it press heavily upon you? Is it something you value and something you appreciate greatly? Certainly living in a foreign country, I mean, we're pretty close in terms of geography,
yeah.
and society.
But the thing is, I grew up in an Irish family in Glasgow, so in a way I have a disconnect from both cultures,
yeah.
because I'm not, well, I used to have this argument with my dad all the time, usually on the way over to Ireland, where I'd say, I am not Irish, I am Scottish, I was born in Glasgow. And my dad would say, if a bird builds its nest in a pigsty, what comes out of the eggs, pigs or birds? And then I'd sulk for the rest of the way. So there was that disconnect of growing up in a city. Mm-hmm. But, you know, within the four walls of the house, it was Donegal, yeah. You know. So there was always this kind of strangeness or being drawn in two different directions.
There's a huge connection with Northern Ireland, but Donegal and Scotland.
Definitely. In fact, when I came to Dublin and I said that I was from Glasgow and my parents were from Donegal, they said, ah, yes, Glasgow, the capital city of Donegal. And there's a huge Irish community there, certainly.
Indeed, yeah. I'm just recalling, I think it was Declan Kyward, he said, all of the best Irish writers seem to be Anglo-Irish. They exist in that kind of liminal space, you know, the Oscar Wildes, the George Bernard Shaws.
Okay, caught between two cultures.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and perhaps that distance just allows you to observe those cultures in a way that you can't do when you're immersed in them.
Yeah. And is that something, can you see that in your poetry? Distance and heavy reliance, or not? No, it's not reliance. A heavy theme of observation and perception.
I think I'm that kind of person anyway. Okay. And I think it's probably a good thing as a poet to be an observer, to just kind
Indeed.
Of pick out the little snippets of what's happening in life. And I'd say certainly the poems that I've been writing over the last while, I wasn't a writer in Scotland. I mean, that's the other thing, you know.
we dragged that out.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I didn't start writing until I'd been living in Ireland for kind of 8 years.
Okay.
Writing seriously, that is, actually saying, okay, I'm going to do this. There were always kind of bits and pieces. So I think probably, I wonder, do my poems sound more Irish than anything else? They're certainly immersed in what's happened in Ireland over the past 10 to 12
yeah.
years. Yeah.
Let's talk about How to Lose Your Home and Save Your Life, your debut collection. What was your experience with? I mean, that was published in 2013.
2014, just then, coming up on a year now.
So quite recent, yeah. So it's almost its birthday.
Yes, in a month's time.
Lovely. And you kind of felt that if I'm going to be a writer, I better start writing. That was 2006, did you say?
2007, I did my first writing class. Yeah.
Okay. So in that 6-7 years, what was writing like for you? What was your experience with journals, with getting published, with the scene, so to speak?
Because yeah.
We were chatting with Phil Lynch before 4 o'clock about a lot of the pretty vibrant spoken word scene in Dublin at the moment. There's nearly stuff on every night. I mean,
yes.
And you yourself know this as well with your own relationship with Double Shot.
Yes, that's right.
So, sorry, that's a very long-winded question. So, publishing.
What was
my
experience?
7 years before your debut collection.
Yeah, it's funny. I probably did everything wrong or backwards in that. Well, maybe not actually. I started applying to competitions rather than to journals. And I suppose there is a logic to that, in that once something is published, it can't be sent to a competition. So I suppose I was trying to get the best out of the poems that I'd written, but also it was a way of measuring whether those poems actually worked, whether I was writing at a certain level. And I was very lucky in that I won one of the Fish Prizes back in 2009. I was also a runner-up in the Ms. Lexia short story competition in the UK in 2009. So I kind of had two very early successes, which spurred me on. It's great. Oh, you get a lot of encouragement from those things. And so I tended then to apply more to competitions than to journals. And then when I won the competition that meant that my collection was going to be published, I kind of thought, God, nobody will actually know who I am, because I haven't actually been doing that thing of building a portfolio of work and putting it out there and sort of building awareness of myself as a poet. So I think looking back, the smarter thing to do is probably balance competitions and journals. Okay. There's certainly so many great options out there at the moment and more all the time for sending work to. So I think both of those options are really good to measure the quality of the work that you're writing.
That's a great tip for writers. Yeah. What about the book itself, How to Lose Your Home and Save Your Life? What kind of poems are in there? What, I mean, you said, mentioned that a lot of your writing deals heavily with Ireland in the last 10, 12 years.
Well, the title itself refers to a situation that I've been going through where after I lost my job, I went to my bank to make a small change to my mortgage and followed their instructions and discovered later that they went far beyond what I'd asked them to do. So I've been kind of locked into a situation for a number of years now where I'm trying to get them to take responsibility for that and to undo the things that happened. And that's gone through the Financial Ombudsman. I've gone to the High Court. It's now at the Supreme Court, or rather it's been reassigned to the Court of Appeal. So I found myself from having built what I thought was quite a secure life to suddenly discovering that everything that I thought was secure wasn't. And it's just been a really interesting journey and one that many people here in Ireland are on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And what I found was obviously the stress, the anxiety, the frustration from kind of constantly dealing with these bureaucracies and corporations who are not really interested in what your experience of them is, as long as they're getting what they want. And writing really just became the way to take that stuff out of my head, put it down on the page, get some distance from it again, and then having gained that distance to be able to look at it as a piece of writing and then shape it. And through that, I was able to reclaim these experiences, not as something that was happening to me, but something that I was, I think it's important not to feel victimized by these things, which I think it's very easy to feel that. Mm-hmm. And it was important to me that I reclaim some kind of ownership of what was happening. And that's really what a lot of these poems were about.
Was this pre-2007, pre-Irish Writers? Or
no, I lost my job in 2008. So it's kind of from there onwards.
So you had kind of made the decision, I better start writing. And then happened that
just in the nick of time.
Oh, yeah, thank God you had somewhere to turn to. Yeah,
I know, exactly. It's funny how these things turn out.
You said something very interesting there, that you managed to kind of throw the emotion of the journey out on the page.
Yeah.
And from there you began to fine-tune it and refine it and shape it. Is that the way with most of your poems? It's a sudden burst of inspiration and then you begin to look at it and...
Yes. I think one of the things, one of the reasons that poetry has worked so well, given the other kind of demands on my time over the past number of years, is that you can get the shape of a poem down very, very quickly. And that doesn't mean that you've written a poem. It just means that you've captured the idea that you set out to capture. So with me, it could be things like I find myself having a little argument with myself in my head. And that's usually a sign that a poem needs to be written. So if I'm kind of getting annoyed about stuff in my head, then that usually goes down on a sheet of paper. Or it could be overhearing something that someone said, and I think, God, that's just brilliant. So I'll write that down and start to explore something from that. And of course, the whole thing is like once it's on the page, it can become something else entirely. It won't necessarily end up being the thing that you think you're going to write about when you put it down there. And I think that's part of the fascination of writing, but also it's also why it's really good in terms of taking you out of these really stressful situations, because it allows you to focus on your own creativity and something that you are in control of.
Excellent. Well, perhaps if we could take a poem now from
Okey-doke.
The collection. If you'd like to just give us a small bit of background and introduce the poem.
Yeah, this poem, The Tiger's Tail, it's from September 2010, and it was actually the day after Brian Lenehan made the emergency announcement about the bailout of the banks. And I was in Galway that night, and it just had a sense of it being the last hurrah of the Celtic tiger. So this is the tiger's tale. City, a howl of chemical laughter. Menace fingers the air, seeking purchase in the drunken smoulder of narrow streets. Young girls toss ironed curtains of ebony hair, shared tribal headdress. Tiger sucklings, knock-kneed moon-eyed calves, they perch on the heights of borrowed triumph. Prada, Miu Miu, Louboutin. Fierce children, almost feral, wresting frenzied joy from the teeth of new calamity. Night yawns deep, but they do not know it. Car headlamps sweep the junction, horns blare. Ground shifting beneath them again, the girls totter into the bloom of darkness, each on milky limbs, pale and slender as a birch.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you.
And I always say, every time a poet comes in here, there's nothing quite like hearing it, a poem from the poet's own voice, especially in a lovely Scottish accent as well, makes it be different.
Thank you. I think that's true, though. You hear all of the emphasis that you don't necessarily get on the page.
In the right place, yeah. I was discussing this poem with a friend maybe a week ago, and the Wilfred Owen, knock-kneed, is that totally off the mark?
No, I that's
in it, the Dulce et Decorum Est is one of the things.
I hadn't made that connection, but somebody else has, because there was a review of the collection where I was compared to Wilfred Owen, and I thought, that's really out there. but the point they were making was that he was a lyric poet before the war took over, and it became the great big dirty thing that he had to deal with in his life. So
that's a frightening comparison, as the recession being the First World War.
Yeah, but it is the defining thing that a lot of people are having to deal with in their lives at the moment. So, but that's really interesting. I hadn't twigged that was in Dulce et Decorum Est as well.
And in terms of what you were saying before about not becoming victims and stuff, and there's a definite sense of the next generation in this poem, the pale and slender girls on milky limbs, kind of, what are they tottering into? We're on the edge.
Teetering on the edge, yeah.
And what do you think, what are we on the edge of? Or have we pulled back from the edge?
I don't know. I think that's very hard to say. I know I've certainly rethought a lot of things that I would have taken for granted before, how I choose to spend my money, how I choose to spend my time. But I think for every generation it's different, because obviously I have an experience of what I've lived through before, and I've lived through another recession. I mean, I lived through Thatcher's Britain in the 1980s, or rather Scotland in Thatcher's Britain in the 1980s, which was kind of even worse. the sort of the impact of you know, spending 7 years studying a particular subject and then coming out into a place where there were no jobs. So I do have a sense of kind of the ups and downs of you know, this is kind of how the world works. Yeah. Whereas I think if you're much younger, you don't have that sense of perspective yet. Mm-hmm. So I kind of hope they'll be okay. But I think each generation has its own wisdom and its own learning. So
on that note of optimism, perhaps, can we take another poem?
Yes, I'm not sure optimism is, is the way to go. But this particular poem, I guess this is from 2011. So this is kind of dealing with being right in the thick of kind of scrapping with the bureaucratic process and trying to just keep my head above water. This is Occupied. White slab on the doormat. Postmark, a familiar china blue. The forfeit of dignity in monthly increments. And I'm sick to my stomach again. On TV, Occupy Wall Street. As though greed were a discovery. Injustice, a shiny toy, or the new black. I've been in my foxhole for 3 years now, dug in behind enemy lines, terraced walls, the polite exterior of war. Wrestling the slick of their machinery, bare hands ink-bloodied in daily skirmishes with quicksand bureaucracy, and you with the placard, the ironic slogan. Where the fuck were you?
Lovely, lovely. Strange that the war comes up again.
Yeah, I was just thinking that there as I was reading it. It's there, definitely.
It is, it seems so long ago that all that, the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Dame Street.
Yeah. It's kind of sense of what did it do? What did it achieve? What did we get out of it?
There is a note of anger there, definitely.
Yes.
Was there resentment of your own situation or resentment of the system?
I think a bit of both. Like I said before, I had a sense, I thought I knew what my life was going to be at this point, and then suddenly the tables were turned and it was something else entirely. So yes, I think for a while there is that, well, this is just really unfair feeling. And then I think as I started to fight back and started to deal with the different organisations and other aspects of fighting back, I just got a sense that it's the same thing. It's the same thing again and again. It's the same thing all over, which is a very depressing thought. So I think you have to, in the end, I think it always has to come back to yourself, you know?
It should be noted as well that not every poem in here is a snapshot of yourself.
No.
In the banks. I mean, because life must go on.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that's the title as well. It's How to Lose Your Home and Save Your Life, you know. Yeah. So if there is an arc, then it's probably, I'm reading pieces probably from early on in the collection, which do kind of deal with that early stage anger and frustration and resentment and anxiety. But hopefully there's a move as you go through the collection towards someone who's emerging out of the other side of that there is more kind of hopeful pieces.
Possibly could we take something more hopeful?
Something more hopeful.
Because, I mean, there's some beautiful poems of, like, really bucolic scenes and really, there's a lot of poems where there is a sense of rejuvenation.
Yes, actually.
Just stepping out into the garden.
That's one. I'll read that one. Because it's from roughly this time of year as well. And the garden wall had collapsed in the garden, and it took ages to get it rebuilt, to get the insurance and all the rest of it. So I've been living with chaos in the back garden for a really long time. And this poem is about stepping out the evening that everything was cleared up and there was a new wall and everything was shiny and new again. So this is after the builders. The evening is ripe with turning, day to night, summer to autumn, and the garden lies stripped and waiting. Black earth breathes deep and exhales at last. Its mute question, a string on the air. A robin picking over the traces wonders at this new reverberation. The pear tree is bent almost double, heavy with fruit, even after a year of brick and rubble mulch. A survivor. Voices carry across the alley and the new wall. Clouds are gathering, along with a sweet familiar smell. Someone, somewhere, is burning turf.
I really love that last line. I think it really captures it, because the poem was like this smoky kind of hearth atmosphere.
Yeah, earthy. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Getting back to the root of things.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, Angela.
No.
It always goes so quick. I know you wanted to mention a couple of things before we left off.
Yes, I do PR and design for Double Shot Poetry Events, which takes place once a month in Books Upstairs. Our next event is Wednesday, the 14th of October, so that's next Wednesday. And we're doing it in conjunction with a regular Galway poetry event called Over the Edge. So we have the writer Kevin Higgins and the poet Mary Maddock coming over from Galway, and they're both going to be reading. And what we also do is we try to introduce an emerging poet, someone who hasn't published a full collection yet. So Simon Lewis will be our emerging poet, and he won the Hennessy Award this year. So that's going to be a great lineup. That's from 6:30, and it's €6 on the door with a free glass of wine. And they're always a fantastic night. So if you can come along to that, that would be great.
And your website for more poems?
Yes, anyone who wants to read more work, it's called adreamingskin.com, www.adreamingskin.com, and you can also buy copies of the collection there.
We'll leave out with a poem, and while you're deciding there, I'll sign off to the listeners. You've been listening to Writer's Block 90.3 Near FM with me, Morgan O'Reilly, and a very special thanks to my guest Angela Carr and to Phil Lynch earlier from the Lingo Festival. As always, if you'd like to contact the show, you can email me morgan_O'Reilly@live.com, or you can get me at Twitter. The Twitter handle is @morgan_O'Reilly, and all of the news and podcasts and all of the information will be up on Twitter, so that's the place to go. But Angela, final poem.
Okay, this is After the Storm. The trees are children tonight, full of noise and running through the house, prying windows, chattering below stairs, pulling faces and teasing the shade's yellow daub of light. They scatter petals across the table, the tiled floor a crimsoned peony march. The back door rattles. I think it's you, and almost rise before I remember. Night swells and snaps. It roars down from the attic like the roll of the sea, sweeps its tantruming offspring out through the yard, back to the wandering forest. In its wake, silence drifts, dry as tinder, into the quivering drum of the house. Walls fold around this new emptiness, trying on its shape, as I fold around mine.